that, I mean, even more so off the cushion, but certainly on the cushion, that this kind of awareness goes away completely. It can go away for hours on end, and it just seems so easy to get lost. And I've never really found a way of sort of bringing the habit of bringing my mind back to everyday life in the same way.
Yeah, I stand by my statement. I acknowledge your felt experience, and yet, you see, there is a shift, isn't it? Technically, in terms of Buddhist psychology, sati is something that is present. It's not something that goes and comes. It is something that, in however moderate degree, is available. But obviously other things are also available. Yeah, other things are also present. So it is not always the dominant factor. And if you cultivate, as we do with such exercises, obviously the perspective sati offers increases dramatically. Because we, rather than cram it with sense impressions or with strong impulses, we kind of try to make it spacious. Yeah, and what becomes obvious is how much space there actually is. How much perspective there actually is possible. Any moment, sitting here, my life can kind of unfold and I get a picture of some of my major habits. You know, you can get quite profound glimpses at what you do within sort of a couple of minutes. Practically, we need to remind ourselves of this. It's not so much that we need to reinvent mindfulness, but we need to find ways back to it. We need to remind ourselves that, hey, it's possible that I can relate differently to thought other than just believing them, or talking to them, or fighting them off. So the thing I found most immediate and most helpful is body awareness. Where does my weight go? Where to in my belly do I breathe? How much of my breath can I feel? How much of me is here right now? I have found it the best safeguard for establishing presence is establishing embodiment, establishing, getting in touch how this body feels. Irrespective of how it feels, you know, sometimes it feels lousy, tired, worn, stretched, overstimulated, sometimes it feels powerful, strength, everything. But either way, just to acknowledge how it feels changes the relationship in my to my experience. So the same holds true for the opposite. Every state, every dissociative state, that's what we are speaking of in jargon, if you actually want a word for unmindful moments. It's, we're kind of engrossed in some form of dissociation. Either we are spaced out or we are over-identified with a particular aspect in our experience. That thought or this feeling or this conception. As soon as body comes back into the picture, somehow that object, the thought, the memory, the fantasy, the fear, loses its grip. It's very difficult to hold continual anxiety if you keep breathing into your belly and keep feeling how you breathe into your belly. Yeah. Anxiety needs thought. It needs limited perspective. It needs obsessing with one aspect and connecting that aspect, which is always in the future in the case of anxiety, with nightmarish scenarios. As soon as I take part of my awareness and put it into the belly, automatically my fear decreases. Maybe it will not go away completely, but fear or anxiety being impermanent cannot maintain itself without my active feeding it. If I take away my awareness from the feeding frenzy and put it in my belly, Yeah. Even if it doesn't go completely away, it dramatically decreases. So the short answer for your experience that mindfulness seems to go away is if we establish bodily awareness, it will stay with us longer. Obviously, there are habits. You can establish a bodily awareness habit, which, you know, has an echo, which carries through. The gaps where you will go away for a long time will become shorter. And coming back will become a more routine activity. You open a door, yeah? You move a handle, you push a lever, you kind of, you take stock where the body is. You take stock what the breath is doing. Simple tricks. Entering and leaving situations is a trick for me. Now, for many years I had the practice of not taking more than one step at a time. I was a compulsive jumper on stairs. So this is just no way I could do one step at a time. I just needed to take three steps always. Just even if I wasn't in a hurry. That's where the practice came from. Just because it was a habit. Just kind of create habits that challenge your patterning. So kind of leaving one situation, going through the door, entering another situation. Yeah. Thresholds, contrasts, every strong sense impression can bring us back. You know, a motorcycle can bring us back to the breath because we may, you know, it kind of impinges, we're here, okay, we can come back. Make use of those things in everyday life. Change in temperature, change in spatial environment. These are great tricks to help. There is always something in us that is capable of being in relationship to what's happening. Even if you're utterly alone, you know, you're still in relationship to your experience. And that can be reflected upon. It can be made aware. It can be investigated. I hope this responds to some of your questions. Please.
In the commentary, what you were saying about body awareness, it seems that when I observe animals, often they seem to be very body aware. I don't know whether this is the case of the sciences on the consciousness or otherwise animals, but they do seem to be very aware of their own bodies. And I think that, for me, that sort of ties in with what you were saying about body awareness being the key to being now.
I'm not sure about the animals myself. I have actually mixed feelings, you know. If I see squirrels, I have a feeling, yeah, they're pretty aware where it's at with themselves. But Swiss cows, I'm a Swiss, by the way. I was made out to be a German today. I live there, but I, as a Swiss, and I may say something about Swiss cows here, I was never particularly impressed with their body awareness. They don't seem to have the sort of magic, you know, like dolphins exude or squirrels or so. So I'm not sure about this, but I do know, you know, time only makes sense if you have body. There is no time is totally useless as a concept unless it has something to do with a body. Presence only makes sense if it is embodied. If I have awareness of the body, I have a connection to a now. Yeah. I have a connection to power. I have a connection to sensitivity. So all these things entail a body being here. And the problem with dissociative states is not that it's kind of immoral. The problem is it's useless. You know, psychologically, however legitimate it is to dissociate from difficult or traumatic things, it takes you away from the place where you could do something, where you could feel something, where you could act, where you could take responsibility, where you could learn. also where you could be empathetic and where you can be compassionate. Spiritually, dissociation is a catastrophe because you cannot understand suffering out there. You know, you have to, before you can transcend anything, you actually have to have arrived at it. Yeah. So before we can kind of understand and go beyond suffering, we actually have to be prepared to suffer. And to be there, and to be able to hold it too. Yeah. Now that's not easy. So, the body, finding a way back into bodily presence, obviously is a big task. And it's not always easy, depending on our histories, this is not always easy. But I do feel learning to be present with that body, however boring or however painful it is a powerful tool. I hope this responds to some of your question. Please.
I was just thinking that during a retreat, one of my teachers said that people who had experienced traumas in their childhood find it very difficult to be in the body. So the embodiment for people who had that difficult childhood was quite a difficult thing. And I was thinking, at the same time, I've got some friends who are experiencing some emotional difficulties, like in terms of self-harm. Now, self-harm seems to be like an extreme of what you were saying. Try with the extreme and then you find a balance. Seems to be a very strong way of bringing your body to presence in order to sort of switch off your mind. Could you say something on that? As a teacher of meditation and a psychotherapist.
I would concur with your meditation teacher. Obviously, the group most challenged with body awareness are people who have severe traumas, in bodily traumas, because obviously dissociation is a defense, a very effective and historically the earliest defense. We all do that. I suspect we all have childhood traumas, and we know the technique. It's one way to feel less is just by holding your breath, just kind of, and you desensitize. And before we can turn away the head and say no more spinach today, mummy, before we have the power to say that or do that, nature has provided us with another type of strategy to desensitize ourselves temporarily. And I think that is useful and necessary. At the same time, not feeling things is one of the most effective ways at freezing such types of feeling into our system. So the decision to not feel something diminishes our capacity to feel not just the nasty things, but actually the good things we can't feel either. And the pattern is established.
So. It's not a fully aware decision, is it?
No, it is not a...
It's not, oh yes.
It is a defense reaction, No defense reaction is in the word, in the Buddhist sense, a fully aware decision. It is inbuilt, and if habitual, obviously problematic. The question is how to find your way back. I do think gentle breathing meditation is actually a very effective way of coming slowly back and inhabiting one's body, even if trauma experience has been there. In terms of your friend you speak, self-harm is a serious story. Yeah, this is not something that can be meditated away. I would encourage meditation, but only conjoined with therapeutic attention. Yeah. I would discourage the notion that with a little bit of mindfulness practice and a Vipassana retreat, things like self-harm issues can go away. These meditative practices can help, but they, in the case of self-harm, definitely they need therapeutic attention. Yeah. Particular, personal, sustained therapeutic attention. So, I'm glad your friend has you.
Pardon?
I'm glad your friend has you as friend.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how to formulate the question, but you're saying a lot, I feel, about the body-mind connection. And sometimes I'm not sure which is which. You say the body feels this, the body feels that, and I'm beginning to see by what you're saying, actually it's the mind that feels this, the mind that feels that. And there's a very fine line between what we call disidentification and dissociation. And could you speak to that?
Well, I think I'd like to give the credit here to the Buddha, basically. I think he had some great clarity on this, although he didn't quite speak the jargon we may engage to broach these topics today. I think he had a clear understanding of, say, dissociative processes. And his emphasis on body awareness is stunning. If you actually look at the text, he's quite clear. This identification is, this is one of the pet side effects, really, which psychologists have picked up. Many of the particularly behavioral psychologists takes on Buddhist mindfulness practice favors the disidentification aspect, which is obviously useful, but there's a lot more to mindfulness than just disidentifying with your thought patterns, although I think disidentifying with one's thought patterns is a real big advantage. And the difference between dissociation and identification is indeed a tricky one, because, who am I to be the expert? Yeah. I can have some conceptual clarities, but at the end of the day, if you ever lived and struggled and worked with dissociation in yourself and in others, this is a big story. And you can know a lot about dissociation and give great lectures about it and still happily dissociate,
Thank you.
Any scrutiny on psychotherapist or psychologist will provide. It's well documented, So at the end of the day, if you're a contemplative, if you're a meditator, you will need to find out where this line is for you. And you'll need to test that. There is no easy answer to this. I'm glad you broached it, because it's good. I understand there are a couple of therapists in the room, so I...
loads here.
It's good to just acknowledge this as an issue. Yeah. And obviously, let's be honest, meditators... we are not, if you fish out 100 people, then those people who are interested in meditation, they will be predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly BF schizoid type. Yeah, I'm speaking not in terms of DSM-4, I'm speaking in terms of a temperamental pattern. Yeah? Because these are people who feel that mental experience is powerful, that they can collect their minds. Yeah. So these are the people you need to be worried about. because they say they want to meditate, but actually they want to disappear. Yeah? They want to go someplace where it's safe, where nobody can hurt them, and where they can be happy, and stay there. And get brownie points for being good meditators. So if you look at monasteries, meditation retreats, or meditators, you're prime suspects for this. Now, this is once you know it, this is not necessarily a disadvantage. It's only a real disadvantage as long as we don't admit it. Because obviously much can be done. So I'm trying to counteract that by going back to the Buddha's teaching and say, look, this is body awareness. You know, it's not just disidentifying with my thoughts that it is about. It is being present with what's happening in the body.
The interesting thing is that, like most people, I have certain aches and pains in my body. And now and again I get these experiences, it's happening more and more frequently, even though it's momentarily, where suddenly the breathing just opens right up and I'm concentrated. It's not a direct result of meditation, but it's obviously a result of meditation. And it can happen anywhere, at any time, and at that point that I feel completely embodied with no aches and pains whatsoever. And my balance has come back to my walk, so to speak, you know. And it's a wonderful experience. So it's bringing it. And when you said about presence and breathing in the body becomes, I don't know what you said exactly, something about timelessness in the body. That's how it feels. So I'm wondering about what is the connection. Because once that experience goes, I'm back to the aches and pains. I don't know why it's associated with something. See what I'm saying?
Well, try to find out what you did or what you didn't do before that experience happened.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Well, try to backtrack your steps. Yeah. Obviously, the degree of your collectedness makes a big difference. Yeah. Now, sometimes this is possible, sometimes not. That has to do not just with your goodwill and intention, it has to do with the life circumstances, the amount of time, your health, your talents. Yeah. Many factors play into this. But enjoy the fruit of this and consider it perishable.
Yeah.
Good. Maybe a last question, please. Well, good.
I mean, I find I can get into a meditative state running or practicing yoga more easily.
Any trick that helps. Any trick that helps is good, you know. Don't be choosy.
Okay.
I would still try to sit. But if you find easier access to sitting through stillness of mind through hatha yoga, do hatha yoga. I find rock climbing quite powerful. I think it is necessary. I have not found anything to substitute it, but you know, there are other ways of finding your way into body or finding your way into stillness. For some people, sitting is easier than for others. I do think that the power of such a posture is unmatched. I do not know anything that could replace it. But there are many ways where we can learn finding stillness. Yes, it's short. I enjoy being with you. But I am conscious that our time is drawing to a close, and I would like to thank you for having come. I know there are alternatives here in London to spending the Sunday meditating. I think you're blessed to have this. This is a lovely space, and you seem to have found a working format. Compliments to London Insight also, how they have handled me and my trip so far, and everything is. I was impressed. Yeah. Okay. It's delightful to be with people who take this practice serious enough to come to engage with it. I find it inspiring. I don't think I must make any secrets where this is from. Both as far as the tradition goes and as far as my personal biography goes, if you feel inspired by this, if you think this is useful, consider supporting it, supporting places, organizations, supporting teachers that make this possible, that you sit here and I sit here with you, goes back to something that is 2,500 years old. And while some famous people with their names on the book, we know many, many people who have made that possible, people who have fed monks and built monasteries and copied palm leaf manuscripts. These people are not famous. Their names are not in front of the book. And nevertheless, these people have made it possible that you and I sit here today. Yeah? This isn't just some kind of mindfulness fad. You know, this is bigger. And the tradition that has echoed through these 2,500 millennia has been carried on many, many shoulders. You know, people like you who have supported this in their relative ways and by the means they have had in different countries and different times. If you've traveled, if you've been to Asia, you know that this is bigger than may seem if we sit in a rented school on a Sunday afternoon here in London. I'm grateful that this is possible. You and I are part of a privileged generation. I hope you're aware of this, that all the people who will be inspiring teachers to you will probably have had less access to Buddhist teachings than you have. Yeah. Than you can read, download, translate, fill your iPods with. This is a fantastic time. Yeah. So make use of this and support. Put some of it back into the teaching and its continuation. I wish you well. Thank you.